Is there a ticking bomb in the banking system about to go off? A big bomb. What do you know about the repo markets? We're going to talk about it in podcast 885, the Bob Davis Podcasts. As you guys know, I like ambient sound behind those kinds of comforting sounds, the washer and the dryer, the fireplace, and I got my space heater behind me because not only does it provide a soothing ambient sound in the back of the podcast, it also keeps my feet warm, so we're all good with that. All right, we're going to get into this. The repo markets in podcast 885, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, I'm going to be talking about banking in this podcast, and gee, I sure wish it was as simple as talking about payment processing, because ReliaFund is my payment processor, and they make it so simple. I have a button on my podcast page, thebobdavispodcast.com, for my clients to pay through an electronic check. It was custom built by ReliaFund for me, and this is what ReliaFund does. If you have a business, if you are developing back office systems for your business, if you're doing e-commerce, listen up, because here's the thing. This is what ReliaFund does. They are a payment processor that has been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. What does that mean? It means they integrate their system seamlessly with your system, and it works great. There's no long-term contracts. They're secure and technology-focused. If you call them, 866-243-5040, you're going to talk to Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry. They're great. You will deal with actual human beings, and they will work with you to come up with solutions for your business. Check them out at ReliaFund.com. That's R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, ReliaFund.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com, which takes you to their customer interface, and then you can explain your need or problem, and that is how I found those guys, and they're great. ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com. Now, I'm sure this holiday season you're going to have a lot of people in your house, and you might start thinking to yourself, gee, we really need to get the teenagers down into the basement because they're driving us nuts. Or if you're a guy, you might be thinking, God, I'd really like to finish the garage out, put a heater in there, put a floor in there, insulate it, some windows, and a giant television so I can watch the Vikings games in peace. Or maybe you want a new kitchen so you can cook those fabulous dinners. Whole bunches of things like that going on when it comes to the holidays. To do it, you need a builder who's going to be by your side from start to finish. That is Whitetail Builders. Randy Grabo is at 612-282-8801, 612-282-8801. He loves talking about this stuff, and I will tell you, if you're thinking about putting an addition on your house, you got to have a little front planning. You have to do a little forward planning for it, so it's a good time to talk to Randy about your dreams at Whitetail Builders. You can get them online at whitetailbuildersinc.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. That has some of the pictures of the things they've done. Randy is great, and he's focused on details. He also will be there with you from beginning to end, which is something very unusual with contractors. Whitetail Builders of Andover, Minnesota. First of all, not a banker, but I do stay current on financial news. In fact, I love reading the financial news, surprisingly. And people are starting to ask questions about something called the repo markets. So we're going to start with what a repo market actually is, and if there is a problem in the market, and what it means, and how we tell, and all of that stuff. So no, the repo market isn't where they sell your car where it has been repossessed, or a home that has been, for lack of a better term, repossessed by the bank. I'm talking about something called a repurchase agreement. What is that? Well, I'm glad you asked. According to Investopedia, a repurchase agreement is a repo, a short-term agreement to sell securities in order to buy them back at a slightly higher price. The longer definition is, are you ready? A repurchase agreement, repo, is a form of short-term borrowing for dealers in government securities. A dealer sells government securities to investors, usually on an overnight basis, and buys them back at a slightly higher price the following day. That small difference in price is the implicit overnight interest rate. Repos are typically used to raise short-term capital. They are also a common tool of central bank open market operations. I think the most important thing there is repos are typically used to raise short-term capital because companies use the markets to get capital to conduct operations just as the Federal Reserve does. To me, this is very confusing. I had to spend quite some time doing research. So, you know, I'm no different than any of you. I just looked into it. So do we have it? Do we understand? Do we grok this idea of the repo markets? Here's where it gets interesting. Repurchase agreements are generally considered safe investments because the security in question functions as collateral, which is why most agreements involve U.S. Treasury bonds. These agreements can take place between a variety of parties. The Federal Reserve enters into a repurchase agreement to regulate the money supply and bank reserves. Individuals use the agreements to finance purchase of debt securities and other investments. These are strictly short-term investments. There are agreements for longer terms, but they're not common. The parties are betting then with longer term agreements that the interest rate won't fluctuate too much during the term. Okay, so then a repo market. Well, of course, the markets are where investors go to purchase these securities, and that is the focus of this podcast. And I'm going to do this as quickly as I can. I'm not going to talk real fast. But I'm going to try to accomplish this in less than 30 minutes so you can walk away and go, now I understand what the controversy is about, because you're going to be hearing more about it. Right now, you're probably saying, why do I care, right? Or if you're in the financial community, you're probably saying, you don't know what you're talking about. And I would have to say yes, but I do understand the contours of the story. I would have to do a whole series of podcasts to fully explain these arcane markets. Yes, I could interview someone, but everyone does that and it gets boring. Under normal circumstances, these markets actually function well under the radar of the everyday person, except for one thing. When there is a problem in one of these markets that is subterranean to the average person's attention, suddenly it becomes a huge news story and people don't know anything about what's going on. And so I have only one thing to say to the assertion, why do I care? 2008. Remember in 2008, right up until the failure of Bear Stearns in March of 2008 and the Fed seizure of Washington Mutual, people didn't want to hear anything about CDSs, tranches, and AAA bond ratings for the housing markets, and above all, subprime. Subprime was like something that, you know, was a bad cut of steak or a bad date. Moreover, we were told right up until the actual crisis in September of 2008 that the economy was strong and that the mortgage crisis was all a bunch of malarkey, to use a term that's current. Nothing to see here, folks. We all remember what happened after that. So when someone tells you there's nothing to worry about in the repo markets, for instance, well, maybe there is and maybe there ain't. And for everyone that scoffs, just so you know, I'm not sounding the alarm. I'm not saying, get out, the building's on fire. But I have learned one thing from that experience in 2008, and I will never forget being on the air the day the whole thing came down and they had the meeting with the Treasury Department and the banks where they forced the banks, and then we did all these bailouts and the election ensued, and it was a huge disaster. I learned one thing from that experience. Never take what anyone from the government says about anything as the truth. Maybe it is and maybe it ain't, especially when it comes to important stuff like war and banking and the economy, because the politicians don't know any, they know less about it than you do, most of them, and they are terrified of dealing with a financial crisis of some kind that affects voters. And just as an aside, remember, I just spent, you know, a month driving around the central part of the Midwest where prosperity seems to be something that is palpable, right? What happens if there's some kind of financial crisis and suddenly some of that or all of that or a good part of that comes to a screeching halt? Suddenly that becomes important. And remember, they told you nothing to see here, folks, right? So what's all the fuss when it comes to the repo markets, Bob Davis? Why are you talking about this? Well, you know, I've been reading about this for a while, and basically, at one point in the early fall, overnight lending interest rates increased from 2 to 10%, drying up the overnight markets. Of course, that was the lead story on Bloomberg and CNBC and everywhere else. And then the Federal Reserve stepped in with cash, and it has amounted to, since September, about $320 billion. What's more, the Fed pledges as much as $500 billion for next year to keep this repo market liquid. As some have suggested, That is not a long-term strategy. Thus, the growing controversy about the broken repo markets and financing the U.S. deficit. This is very important in the financial media. Remember, they're walking in with $320 billion and then $500 billion. That's $1 trillion over 24 months or less to keep the repo market liquid, because this is the market where we help finance the U.S. debt. Remember, where does the Fed get its money, right? They create it out of thin air. So in the second half of this podcast, we're going to talk about various theories for the problem, and you can draw your own conclusions about what you think is happening. All right, this is the part where I tell you where to get the Bob Davis podcasts. And it's kind of funny because you're already listening to the Bob Davis podcast, but I like to let people know that there's different options. Obviously, Spotify is one of the new options. iTunes is the granddaddy. TuneIn, Stitcher.com, BlogTalkRadio.com, blah, 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 blah. Also, PodMN. You do a search for that. This is an app where Hubbard Interactive is now doing an app for local podcasters here in the Twin Cities, and I'm on that one as well. That's pretty cool. I do appreciate the sharing of my posts on social media and liking not so much the comments, because I don't care about those. I do appreciate people following me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and I do appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. There's a big yellow donate button. Thank you, Greg Stamp, and also Parts by Nate for, I think, $25 each. Thank you, John Holland, for buying me new tires when I was on the trip. That was amazing. So, yeah. And I got to talk about these fluctuating temperatures, because they cause plumbing and heating problems. And when you have these kinds of problems, you got to have somebody around that knows what they're doing when it comes to fixing them at home or your business. When you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service. We've been saying for years, that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, online at ryanplumbing.com. They go back four generations in Frogtown. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. It's been below zero. Most of the time, these problems that happen with plumbing come up because they've been happening all along. And Ryan is there to make sure that, A, you get this stuff checked regularly, and B, when you do have a problem at home or business, you got somebody that can fix it and fix it right. Ryan Plumbing at ryanplumbing.com. Don't forget Cartridge World in Maple Grove, Powers Printing at thebobdavispodcast.com. And there is so much printing, and I hate my printer because those print cartridges are expensive. Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores, and they are guaranteed to perform as good as new when it comes to cartridges. 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com for more info on Cartridge World. Why pay more to print? As James Bianco, founder of Bianco Research, said recently in a Marketplace interview, the big picture is the repo market is broken. The goal of the Federal Reserve interventions recently, which exceeded all expectations in the financial community by hundreds of billions, was to keep the banks flush as they deal with month-end funding issues, corporate tax payments, and the deluge of Treasury debt being sold by the federal government to fund its deficit. Those are not my words. That is a direct quote from Marketplace, or Market Watch, rather. Remember, now we have a $1 trillion budget deficit that has to be funded by selling treasuries. Is it regulatory? In other words, is the cause of this repo market problem regulatory in nature? Says another expert, banks have plenty of money on hand but prefer to hold onto it and borrow money to settle their accounts. Again, according to MarketWatch, Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan Chase said bank regulations are a factor. Dimon warns short-term lending rates could again soar, causing another crisis without more permanent fixes, while avoiding an express call for rule changes. So this is, again, this congressional issue and some rules put in place after the 2008 crisis. Some argue with good reason. Now they're starting to say, hey, it's these basic rules that have been placed that are causing some of this. And again, this is too complex for me to really comment on, just letting you know that this is part of the contour of the story. Moreover, the Fed's Randall Quarles, point man on banking supervision for the Federal Reserve, said the existing regulatory framework may have created some incentives that contributed to recent repo funding stress. Remember when I said You know, I don't see a nuclear apocalypse, but I have seen plenty of government-caused apocalypses. Governments pass laws. They have, especially when it comes to the banking system, they have results, and the results are not always real great. Again, not saying this is a crisis, saying it's something that should pique everybody's attention. Now, I should say that experts do agree that the Federal Reserve's actions have calmed the markets and that the system is functioning as it was intended, but there could be knock-on effects from the Fed's stabilization efforts. Short-term yields being pressured lower and investors taking advantage of the liquidity to rotate to riskier assets, and most importantly, in my view, as the central bank share of the T-bill market expands to an estimated 20% of the market by mid-2020 from 1% currently. So we're talking about financing a massive budget deficit. And we're not even talking about the public debt at this point of $23-plus trillion. And then we come to the latest focus of concerns about the repo markets, hedge funds. Now, quickly, a hedge fund is nothing more than a limited partnership of investors that use high-risk methods such as investing with borrowed money in hopes of realizing large capital gains. The basic idea here is a hedge fund is supposed to make money even when the market goes down or up by using various trading strategies. If you've watched any gangster movies, this is my interpretation, you've probably heard the term laying off bets. What's that mean? Well, bookies lay off debts so they don't lose too much on any of their positions, let's say any of their bets. And my sense is the purpose of the hedge fund is basically the same purpose in the big casino known as the markets. Anyway, guess what? According to the Financial Times and others, the hedge fund's insatiable demands for cash made the overnight problem worse. Others attribute the problem to rumors that a big European bank is in trouble, but finally, and most importantly, the elephant in the room, drum roll please. Bankers and analysts and fund managers say the bigger issue here is the amount of U.S. government debt in the market, which is draining cash out of the bank's reserve accounts that might otherwise have flowed into, through and into the repo markets. And this, the original sin in the U.S. Treasury market right now is not people trying to profit from dislocations. It is the excess supply from the U.S. government, said one repo banker. And this is a very important quote. If the U.S. government hadn't issued a lot of debt in 2019, we wouldn't be having this conversation. The reality is that if hedge funds didn't buy treasuries, it would be a lot worse. Is the takeaway this? So there's two takeaways for me, but this is the main one. Remember when people said the public deficits don't matter? And even when they're right to say it's the spending that's the problem, the pace de resistance, as far as I'm concerned, spending deficits don't affect the price of bonds or the money supply. And yet, here we are talking about overnight borrowing for the banks financing the U.S. debt, drying up and being propped up by the Federal Reserve to do what? Basically create money, or for the lack of a better term, print money to cover the debt incurred by the U.S. government. In other words, your Congress, your president. In conclusion, there's a couple things, and I guess the other takeaway is this. So we are told the economic performance of the United States is booming. We are told that we are booming. Meanwhile, over in Europe, it's moribund growth, basically 1.5%. And we're told that we are enjoying this incredible prosperity. And in some places, I will agree, a level of prosperity is visible. We are told we are enjoying this incredible experience of prosperity because the United States economy is booming. Well, if the U.S. economy is booming, then why are we continuing to finance these massive, massive budget deficits? And without even having to get into that, this massive $23 trillion debt, which is at least 100% of the U.S. market performance. So at 2%, at the most, 1.9, 1.3, whatever the fourth quarter numbers will end up being, 2% growth. And yet we are still printing money. In other words, the Federal Reserve is still producing out of thin air large amounts of money. What happens when they do that? They take it onto their balance sheet. basically, and then they have to figure out a way to get rid of that collateral, whatever it is that they've financed. And what they have been doing is propping up the banking system. Now, without getting too technical, it has often been said that in these instances, periods of money printing, the people closest to the money printing gain the most. Okay, so when you have your hedge fund managers that are billionaires, when you have your large corporations that are using these tools because they're able to finance, and you have CEOs making all this money, and then you have all these politicians running around fulminating at this quote-unquote inequality, is it due to the fact that they have created something that everyone has to have, or is it that they're closest to the money printing? I would submit that inflation is higher than they say it is. Most of it is hidden. And I would submit that the people who are making the most amount of money are the people who are closest to the money printing in Washington, D.C. and in New York City, and by extension in places like Silicon Valley and Hollywood, and wherever you see people who can avail themselves of these, you know, laying off bets, games, you know, laying off their bets to hedge funds and so forth, or borrowing money in the overnight markets, whatever you want to say, they're the ones that are being insulated. And so we are creating this inequality through the auspices of our House of Representatives and our Senate and our presidents, regardless of party. And it's not a function or factor or an artifact of capitalism. I think it's a peculiar American form pooling resources, for lack of a better term. There's another term I would use, but I'm not going to use it in this podcast. I think the better of that. But I don't. I look at the situation and I see this inequality. I don't think inequality is an artifact of capitalism. And most of the time, when you hear people talking about it, they blame capitalism. That's not what's going on here. This is a government function. They are printing money out of thin air. No one's earning it. It's being spread around in the system, and people are earning large commissions and making large amounts of money by playing the market, just like you would play blackjack or play, you know, the roulette wheel. That's what they're doing. And I detest sometimes that description of the markets, but if it's apt, then it is apt. So in conclusion, the U.S. government just collected the highest amount of taxes ever, and it is $1 trillion short of the spending in just 2019 during the presidency of a Republican. Remember, Republicans are supposed to be for fiscal responsibility and smaller government, and we yet have a $1 trillion deficit. And guess what the culprit is in the short term? And I'm sorry, but it's true. And it's true because it is a Keynesian culprit. It is not a supply-side culprit, even though they are calling it a supply-side culprit. I mean, supply-siders are Keynesian as well, but let's just put it this way. We're not operating from, you know, a classical economic basis. We're operating from a Keynesian basis, whether Republican or Democrat. And here's an example. We all remember the much ballyhooed tax cut. And yes, thank you, we small and larger businesses will happily take those tax reductions and ask for more because we don't like paying taxes, because for us, it is flat out an expense. And if we can avoid paying them legally, we will do so. But they did not cut spending to finance those reductions. So the culprit in the short term is the tax cut bill passed by the hapless Republicans when they had a majority who could not bring themselves to cut their own precious spending programs, and a president who calls himself a conservative who could not bring himself to dedicate his presidency to reducing deficits and reducing spending. And those pesky continuing resolutions they pass, which makes the annual budget their responsibility, is a joke, because we don't have a budget anymore. We just pass continuing resolutions and we blame it on, well, the problem here is the division in between these two parties. I'm going to say it. There's no difference between the two parties. I hate people that say it. I am now saying it, because both parties are operating under the idea that you have to prime the demand pump in order to get economic growth. And every year we get less and less and less from priming the pump. We are at 1.5% 1.9%, 2% economic growth, and it's costing us $1 trillion a year. Okay, in 12 years, that's another $12 trillion to the budget deficit minimum, right? So the reality is that they did not cut spending to finance those tax reductions. And so people say, well, how are we going to pay for it? Well, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is they could have provided a – if you really are truly going to practice supply-side economics, you cut the budget first, then you cut taxes. Then you cut again, then you cut taxes. You don't cut taxes first and then not cut the budget because it's about spending and it's about reducing the footprint of government. Okay. Look, Ma, financing that deficit might be a big friggin' problem which needs to be solved through continuous intervention by the Federal Reserve. And where are we at since 2008? QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4, all massive interventions. In other words, the Federal Reserve buying securities to prop up the markets, creating lots and lots of billionaires. And now interventions in the overnight repo markets to save not necessarily the banks this time, by financing the federal deficits by propping up the overnight bond market. But wait, mister, you just said financing the debt doesn't put pressure on corporations that need to borrow. Well, that's what they say, but not when Uncle Sam is throwing money created out of thin air at the problem. And of course, we all know it isn't just the Republicans who have paid no attention to spending limits. They now join Democrats on the all-night drunken spending binge boat, so there's plenty of blame to go around. Is it possible the debt bomb is about to explode? Now, it isn't a crisis yet, but neither was the real estate borrowing and subprime mortgages in 2006. And if it does become a crisis, well, your old bankrupt Uncle Sam can always blame the banks and Wall Street. All right, when you have an emergency, and it's not a national emergency, as we're probably going to have, remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. They can help you out. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. And when it comes to manufacturing, you guys know a big digital sponsor of the Bob Davis podcast, Depot Star. I see lots of companies that are bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. If this is you and you're considering American manufacturing, or you're just looking for a great American manufacturer, remember Depot Star, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit them online at depostar.com. That's DEPOTSTAR, depostar.com. So yeah, I think about this stuff a lot, and it's one of the things I love most about podcasting is I can just basically on a Saturday morning go, you know, I'm gonna just investigate this real quick, and then I'm gonna tell people what I've learned. And there's always updates, but again, if I've learned one thing from these kinds of financial things from being on the air day to day and talk radio and doing podcasting, just when you think that you believe them, you find out they have been lying to you. So we don't really know what's going on with these layered complexities in these financial markets, but every now and then something comes up that deserves to be mentioned, and that's the purpose of this podcast. Thanks for listening to Podcast 885, Debt Bomb.